Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. Each week we select from a menu of topics that can impact business growth to discuss with experts from a wide variety of disciplines. And today at the cafe, I'm excited to have Dawn Reese, CEO of The Wooden Floor, and Maricela Rios-Faust, CEO of Human Options, to discuss how strategy, financial stability, and leadership of nonprofits are essential to ensure the long-term success and growth. Dawn, Maricela, welcome.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Before we start, I'll go with Dawn first.
Okay,
why don't you talk a little bit about yourself and about your nonprofit?
Great. Thank you, Angelo, again for the opportunity. A little bit about myself. I started the first part of my career in the management consulting field with working in the high-tech sector. I had this incredible opportunity to work with a visionary management guru at the time. His name was Randall Walty. He's passed. But he really believed in giving back to the community. So when I was in my early 20s, I served on the board of directors for a symphony board and also a health and human service board.
Have a magic hand.
And then also, I started a nonprofit with him in the 1990s. And so what that really gave me, I believe it's my passion and purpose for the work I do now at The Wooden Floor, because I'm able to bring arts, education, human service to help low-income youth move forward. So The Wooden Floor is a creative youth development organization. It annually provides today 475 young people with a rigorous dance education program that we combine with academics, college and career readiness, and social services. And I'm happy to say that this is our 15th year in a row in 2019 that we are on track to have 100% of our students graduate high school and immediately enroll in higher education, which is a
congratulations.
Thank you. To do that over 15 years and in consecutive is we feel it's a really honor and privilege with our children who then go to become great adults. So we also have students now in college and universities all over the country. They've attended everything from Wellesley to NYU to Cornell to our local community college, which we believe is a really great pathway for many children. And so The Wooden Floor has two locations in Santa Ana today, 1 mile apart. So we call it a connected campus. And then we're also growing locally and nationally at the same time. We have our first national partner in Washington, D.C., called City Dance, and they're now implementing our model here under a license structure, which I'll talk about in a little bit.
Fantastic. That sounds wonderful. You're next.
I'm next. So I feel like I grew up in the nonprofit industry. I started my nonprofit career when I was in my early 20s. I was working at Toys R Us and going to school and decided I didn't have enough to do at the time. And I took on an internship and I began working at a nonprofit that was working with at-risk kids. And I knew at that point that that was definitely something I wanted to do with my career long term. The business element always spoke to me. I was really passionate about the work I was doing at Toys R Us and was in a management role there, but knew that I wanted to combine both my ability to be a business leader and my heart and do something that was really meaningful. So over the last 20 years, I've really been able to look and find my path to what I'm currently doing today. I have the great honor of being the CEO of Human Options, which is a nonprofit here in Orange County that's been around for nearly 40 years. It was founded really with the vision that no woman or child should ever be afraid in their own home. And we continue that vision moving forward. And what we've really looked at as an organization is really igniting social change in this county and getting this county in particular to really recognize relationship violence as an issue that impacts everybody and making sure that we're educating and advocating for those affected by it, both victims and survivors, and empowering those survivors to make a change and to be able to heal on their path. So it's a great honor to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, absolutely. I think this is a great topic for discussion. As I think I mentioned prior to coming in, we've obviously been promoting this event and we have gotten a lot of likes and views and repurposes on LinkedIn. So this is obviously a lot of folks are waiting to hear this conversation. One of the things I've heard from both of you, it's really about that passion and commitment. Yes. And I think that that kind of is at the heart, I would have to believe, of not only as leadership of a nonprofit, but those that are, you know, under your purview and working for you, as well as people like myself that are might be helping out or donors. Do people come to you with, you know, that passion and that fire like you have, or they come with curiosity and then they evolve into really wanting to be part of this? Who wants to take this one? You want to take this one, Maricela?
Yeah, that's a great question. at Human Options, we have the benefit and of really having people come to us with passion and a connection to what we're doing. And it's interesting because that connection continues to grow and grow. And yes, there's a little bit of curiosity, I think, in the beginning, but that curiosity really stems from like a heart connection and really valuing individuals and knowing that they want to make a difference. And so we're fortunate at the organization where everybody from our finance person to our direct service person has a connection to the mission and really knows that this is somewhere they want to be and this is somewhere they want to create change.
Dawn, you want to add to that?
I would just add also the way that we also today, I agree everything with Maricela said, but also the way we do today, especially with our growth right now, is that we wanted also to make sure that we had our culture transcend. Mm-hmm. And so we've actually identified a profile of those employee potentials that come through the wooden floor. We look at mission-driven, business-minded people. We look for people that have a passion for making a change in young people's lives, like Maricela said. That is really where it starts. Mission and passion. If you don't have that energy, it's not a good fit for the organization. We know that we're driving social change. We're making a difference in young people's lives, and we need people that are all in it to win it. So that's really our philosophy. So if you're not, there's lots of organizations to find your passion and purpose in. And, you know, not all nonprofits are for everybody. Not every mission is for everybody. But let's help you. If it's not a good fit, let's help you find that right fit for yourself.
That's great advice. That really is. Because in dealing with anything and, you know, even dealing with a client, for example, right. If it's not the right fit, it gets beyond just a paycheck, if you will, right? It has to have a relationship. You want to have that passion of doing well for someone. And so that becomes very crucial.
And as a business, too, to add to that, is just we then also operate in a way to take care of people, make sure that great benefits. A lot of nonprofits are kind of known for, you know, maybe being a little slight on those kind of things. Our board of directors, especially in the recession, didn't make any cuts to salaries because they know we're the critical link, those we serve, mm-hmm. our children mm-hmm. and our families. And so if we start to struggle, we do it at a very high stewardship level. We don't have debt or anything like that. But we just do in a way to take care of our people too.
Okay. So I ask this question of all my guests and usually start off with it. So this is about a business strategies. We're talking about the business of nonprofit. So ultimately it's about growth and surviving and thriving. Mm-hmm. So what keeps you up at night when you're thinking about that aspect of, I'll go back to you with the wooden floor.
So before, I mean, I'm very fortunate to work at the wooden floor. I say that all the time. The way we're run from a structural level, we have something called forward funding that we fundraise funds 8 months in advance of a new fiscal year start. And so we fundraise on a calendar for a fiscal year that runs September 1 to August 31. And I say that because most nonprofits just struggle just that financial unknown. And for the organization, if we continue to raise funds at or above the same level, we're going to be okay because we always have a reserve in our funds. So when you kind of take away fundraising, saying this is a typical answer we were talking about, mm-hmm. Maricela and I talked, it really gets down to, I interviewed CEOs and the number one thing that they were concerned with growing, and that's really where I am today, it's how do you maintain culture over the organization mm-hmm. at both locations or across the nation with your partners? How do you maintain that? And for us, we've identified that our culture aspect is all about high quality and making sure that we're learning as an organization. And making sure that I'm continuing communicating that, the big vision of the why we're doing what we're doing. And so making sure everybody's on board with that. They're transcending the other locations. They're monitoring it the way we do, course correcting, doing all those things. Because once your culture slips, they normally say it eats strategy. Mm-hmm. So that's my answer.
I'd say the same thing. I think for me, it's really the same in terms of culture. You have to really drive your values and really make sure that you're living out the values in the way that was set forth in the vision. And one of the things that we've really been spending time intentionally on is talking about what the values look like in our organization, not just values across from peer to peer, but values with our customer base, which is our stakeholders, both donor and our clients. Really, how are we living those values out? And asking questions about the values that maybe don't really fit or feel a little uncomfortable. Some of them are new. I mean, two of the big ones that we've been really implementing our curiosity and ingenuity, right? As an expert, I mean, we've been in the field of domestic violence and relationship violence for almost 40 years, which makes us an expert in what we do. And yet we have to enter into this with curiosity. It's a really understanding that our marketplace, whether it be our clients and our donors, need information. And if we just have the expert hat on, then we're not really learning from them. And Ingenuity is now, there are many more barriers to accessing services. There's barriers to getting out of abusive relationships, and it could be housing, it could be employment, it could be a myriad of things. And so we really have to think about creative ways in which we approach this issue. And so for us, it's when you think about that, that takes a very special talent pool, which is critical. It's finding the right person, not just in terms of your culture, but or their values, but also that has the skill set and the ability to continue to evolve and that they're open to that. I think that's one of the things I think about all the time is like when we have key staff, how do we keep them engaged? How do we keep them motivated? And then how do we pay them what they're worth?
Well, employees, I mean, that's a challenge all over the place now, especially with low unemployment rate.
Yes, we have the same issue.
And keeping people engaged. and statistics will show that I think it's 85% of the American workforce is either unhappy or disengaged.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So finding that balance and finding that passion, that word we used earlier,
right,
within those people that really want to come every day and be committed to driving forward.
I was just going to add really quick is that also when I was on the Critical Mass program with Rick Franzi, he asked at the end of it, what was my guiding principle? And I've taken that now throughout the whole organization. We now have codified that. And I think having your values, your guiding principles really codified, so you really lead the organization, then what happens is you scale growth, everybody just gets on board because they understand what you're all about.
Well, that's, again, not unlike any business, right? And providing leadership and making sure that you've got buy-in not only from the top, if you two are the CEOs and the leaders, but making sure that the rank and file, if you will, for lack of a better term, are on board, understand what you're doing and are committed to it versus they walk down the hallway and they read something, they don't understand it, right? So you're really getting that buy-in, and that, I think, creates that passion and commitment. So we think about, or at least I think about nonprofits, you know, face the fundamental business challenge. I mean, they're nonprofits, correct? And most, I believe this number might be a little off, but 1.5 million nonprofits in the U.S., don't support themselves through competing like a regular business. It's about raising funds, getting donations. The problem then with a typical nonprofit business model becomes, and I use the phrase, becomes dependent. I think we're going to debate that a little bit. but the question then is, if you're truly a nonprofit, can you innovate? How do you innovate? How do you get away from this dependence? And you're probably going to school me in this anyway, so let's go ahead. Who wants to go first?
I'll go. Don.
You're fired up, Don. I know you are.
Well, it's just that, which I love the question. You know, so yes, I'll just start off. We innovate. We have to innovate to stay relevant. The wooden floor has been around since 1983, celebrating our 36th year. Every almost 5 to 10 years, you see a new phase of the wooden floor because of innovation. Today, we actually put it in design thinking where we actually put it into practice. So it's planning, execution, piloting, do a lot of piloting because we don't always have those risk dollars to go to kind of play big sometimes. But we find through piloting that we find great success that actually turn into major programs. To dependency, I think it's this fluidity of relationship that we believe that we're an extension of the supporters' passions and purpose as well. They want to give back to the community. So those who can give larger gifts, you know, we're just so grateful. And also those who give just what they can, we're so grateful. And so, but just making sure that we're aligning our mission, our own impact that we're having, how we're communicating it to our supporters, gets them excited about helping us in more ways. And so we do look at diversification of revenue. We do look at the way we're structured on a budget basis. We have an endowment fund and we also have planned giving. And that gives us what I call the four pillars of financial sustainability that no one pillar should rock, right? And so that is a leader in a nonprofit and we work at our craft every day. And so it gives us that confidence.
Yeah. Okay. And breaks that dependency. It's the old adage, you're not putting all your eggs in one basket.
Yes. Right? You don't like any business. Exactly. No one customer should, I have an executive coach. He said you'd be a captured vendor because, you know, if they're going to take you over, you know, they own 90% of you.
Sure.
I agree. I think maybe rather than dependency, looking at it as how you get investors, right? And how you sell the investment that they're making in society and in the future and in your mission and how that advances. And so you constantly have to really, as you think about it from an investment perspective, it's much easier to sort of break out of that idea of, oh my gosh, it's scarcity, right? Because dependency is that scarcity piece. And you really have to think abundantly because what we are really marketing and selling is the possibility, right? At Human Options, we're selling the possibility of a violence-free life and healthy relationships. That's what we're selling because we believe we can make that possible. And then there's people that really invest in that and they buy in and they become part of that vision for you and part of that mission. And so to talk about it in terms of dependency, I think really feeds into that idea of scarcity. Yes, we have these needs, and I agree with diversified funding, and that's all very important. And it's also very important to know that what we are doing is changing lives, right? And so really the product that we're selling is a changed life.
Great point. Let's continue then. If you think about, you said 40 years, 37 years you've been around, what's been your biggest challenge? And not only your biggest challenge for both of you, but are these similar challenges that you see across the board for nonprofits? So, Marcella.
Yeah, I think in the nonprofit world, specifically in at Human Options and in the field of relationship violence and domestic violence, there's this continuous swing between prevention strategies and intervention strategies. And there's investment in either prevention, because that becomes the thing that we're all focused on, or investment in intervention. And really, I think what it is really beginning to help educate that it's not one or the other, but it's both, and being able to hold both of those things. Because when you do that, then again, we're able to really look across the spectrum. We at the organization have talked about our interventions, and specifically when we talk about relationship violence or domestic violence, there's a very skewed view of what that means. It's like, oh my gosh, that's a shelter-based program. And so really learning how to talk about what we do beyond shelter doors and really being able to talk about it with removing stigma. And it's a very uncomfortable topic. And so I would say a challenge is really, how do we really tell the story of our organization, tell the story of the impact that we're having, and more importantly, tell the story of victims and survivors and the change that's possible when somebody invests in them.
Okay. Go on.
And when I thought of this question, it was really around branding and marketing. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, branding and marketing falls under what is called overhead in the nonprofit sector. And a lot of
Most sectors, by the way.
Well, all sectors. But in our sector, it has a label.
In our sector, it's a negative.
And so what we're doing constantly is, as you talked about earlier with fundraising, is how do you connect others to a growing mission to make sure that people understand that you're not the organization you were in the past. You have these big, bold visions for what you're doing today, that you're evolving as any business evolves. Mm-hmm. And so you have to invest in branding and marketing. And a lot of times you have to find creative ways to do that. So it's always tied to your mission. Just having an ad on the wooden floor out there, just our name, would do nothing for us. But if we tie it to a mission, we tie it to a story of a student, we tie it that way, and we invest in having a board also that invests in that, there's this ripple effect from that. You know, an ad in the Orange County Business Journal, for instance. Then we're layering
I saw that, by the way.
For our event. And then you see an article I was able to write because of that, telling our story in a different way. And then also you see then an invitation coming out, and you, as you see it, go, oh, my friends are being invited to that event. It's this layering approach that a lot of nonprofits, if they don't think through that, they normally also don't have staff who, outside of development team, who actually have marketing teams. And so those organizations like ourselves know the value of having a director of marketing. You know, we have a design now, an associate is like, that's how we're also now doing social media, like you're talking about. We were able to also make a difference there.
Believe it or not, we're already almost coming to an end, just blowing by. I wonder if we can touch and make it some short comments, but I believe, I mean, both of you have boards, I think fairly extensive boards. And so I'm very passionate about the involvement of a board, being active and not passive. For nonprofits, how important it is for them to have a board, and more importantly, an active board to help you guys achieve your mission, or help them achieve their mission?
Yeah, I think having an active board is critical. Number one is to be able to get the message out. Number two is be able to make and create those connections, and really being intentional about who is on your board, because you need a diverse group of people, individuals, not just diversity in the traditional sense, but diversity in terms of thought and leadership. And so you need people who have an entrepreneurial spirit, and those that have a very strategic way of thinking about things, to create some synergy and then create those connections in the community. So they are the ambassadors. They are the ones that are telling the story. And they are, I think, in a lot of ways, the most important brand representation that we have.
Okay. Yes. Don?
I would just add that I look at them as partners in our work. So they're my thought partners and our organization's thought partners. We at the Wooden Floor, I think it It's different. There's different life cycles of nonprofits. And so when you're an emerging nonprofit, it's traditionally a very volunteer driven board. You know, they're very hands on. But as you really evolve your organization to where we are today, we operate at an exceptional level under board governance standards. And it's really around generative thinking, advocacy, visibility, fundraising, and strategy. And so really today, that's where boards need to go. And I would encourage all board members to look at their roles really differently.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Well, Paul, we come to an end?
We have.
Okay. So, Don, I'll go back to you. Why don't you tell the folks how they can reach you and if they have interest in learning about the wooden floor or about you or advice in general?
Great. My LinkedIn is Don S. Reese and my Twitter account is Don S. Reese. You can reach me there through messaging and direct messaging. Also, our website is thewoodenfloor.org. And I might be really happy to talk to anyone about how I can help them also fulfill their passion and purpose and connect to an organization, if not, are somewhere else.
Okay. Marcel?
Yeah. Our website is www.humanoptions.org. And my email address is mrios@humanoptions.org and also available via LinkedIn.
Great. Thank you. Well, thank you both for joining me at the cafe today. You can find out more about me and read my blogs or view these shows at theponzigroup.com or connect with me on LinkedIn. You can also subscribe to the show at thebusinessgrowthcafe.com, or you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. And I've been saying we're coming to iHeartRadio soon, but we are there, ladies and gentlemen.
Yay.
Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.